This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Every Friday, our show will be broadcasting episodes in a new series examining race and class in the Baltimore region. It's called The Lines Between Us. These first few weeks, we're focusing on housing. Last week, we talked about how redlining grew out of government policies. One of the lines that separate people in this region is blight. There's no sharper example of it than the thousands of vacant homes that are clustered around the city. Some people only pass through the areas filled with vacants. Others deal every day with the problems vacants create. The city estimates the number of vacants at about 16,000. Other organizations say the number is much higher. Vacants are prevalent in the Greenmount and Barclay neighborhoods in East Baltimore, above North Avenue. One of our producers, Stephanie Hughes, went to a meeting of the Greater Greenmount Community Association, where residents described the troubles that flow from vacants.
Whenever you see a vacant property, it means a lot. That's a loss of income for the neighborhood. That's a lost house for the census.
There's no roof on that house. The floors are gone. And actually, the third floor has a big plant growing in the window. And we're afraid that it's going to do something to the neighbor's walls next door.
The house has been vacant for about 9 years now. The pigeons just came this year, and they, like, make bowel movements all on the porch. The whole block smells awful. It's feathers flying in our face all day. They just, like, infested up in there. And
it's embarrassing, you know. The neighborhood used to be a beautiful neighborhood. I mean, trees in front of every house. Everybody could sit out on the front. It was just a beautiful neighborhood. In my block, everybody's been there basically all my life. So we know it. We're a family in that block.
The area is not bad itself. Of course, you have a few people in the area that's bad, but the area not bad at all. But we just comfortable in our home.
Moving away from a neighborhood is not going to solve the problem. You have to stay on your ground. You know, if I move to another neighborhood, then I got another problem because I got to deal with that neighborhood's problem. So it's better to just stay where you at, be part of the problem solution, and get some things done.
Those are the voices of Will Smith, Vera Wilson, and Maisha Hall speaking about the presence of vacant homes in the Greenmount and Barclay neighborhoods where they live. We want to find out, how did there get to be so many vacant properties in Baltimore? Why are some neighborhoods more affected than others? And how do vacants relate to inequality in the region? Joining me now to speak about this is Eric Siegel, who's an instructor at Johns Hopkins Institute for Policy Studies. In his 30 years at the Baltimore Sun, he covered housing and development in Baltimore City. Thanks for coming in, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined on the line by Mel Freeman, executive director of the Baltimore-based Citizens Planning and Housing Association. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Eric, walk us through, I know this is a big question, but walk us through how homes become vacant.
Well, in a city like Baltimore, Baltimore has lost roughly 300,000 people in the last six decades. So obviously when you lose that many people, you have less of a need for the housing that was there. And what happens is people abandon the older properties. Properties become derelict and neighborhoods decline. Also, landlords, property owners, once they get their investments back, once they get their money back from properties, as rents decline and neighborhoods decline, they don't have an incentive to keep up the properties, and sometimes they just walk away from the properties. But basically, you've got a big population loss in Baltimore City over six decades, and there's fundamentally less of a demand and less of a need for housing in the city.
Mel Freeman, what parts of Baltimore have been most affected by vacancy?
It's pretty much in the core of downtown, east and west Baltimore. You know, you sort of have these holes that are east of downtown and then holes that are west of downtown, typically in the neighborhoods of, you know, great neighborhoods like Oliver and Broadway East, and then on the other side, Poppleton and Harlem Park.
The population flight that Eric was talking about, Mel, who left and who stayed?
You know, it's a toss-up, really. A lot of the times, the folks that leave are the folks that can leave. You know, they have the means to say, okay, I'm going to take my loss on this property and go somewhere else and try it again somewhere else. But then there are others that really just can't take that risk. As you heard in the interview that Stephanie was a part of, you know, people just don't have that opportunity to just pick up and leave. And ones that do stay, there's some hardy folks that are staying in these neighborhoods, and these neighborhoods are staying really strong with and because of them, not despite of them, because they're there still working in their community associations, still working hard with the remaining citizens that are there, but it's still tough work for all of them.
Here's Vera Wilson again talking about why she stays in her community in Greenmount.
It's my home. That's where I was born. I grew up there. Well, my home is there. My friends, my family, I'm there. They know where I am.
Mel, how important is that sense of place in keeping and maintaining a population?
Oh, it's extremely important. I was surprised that she didn't mention her church. You know, as with many communities throughout Baltimore and parishes and everything that goes with that, folks did walk to their church on Sundays. They went to their church on, you know, Wednesday or Thursday nights for other events. And having that ability to get to, you know, to your job, to your church, to your family, many, many Baltimore cities have aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents that all live within the same community. All of that has changed as family members have, you know, strengthened their incomes, and they possibly said, well, I'm going to move now, but I'm still going to call this place home. And, I mean, I've even known some neighborhoods where some folks actually have houses in the county but have kept their houses in the city. Not because they didn't want to sell it. It's because, you know, this is home. This is where my family's from. I'm keeping this house.
Okay, but I have to do a reality check. I mean, most of us look at a block with a lot of vacants and assume that the people living there are being forced to stay, that anybody who could get out would get out.
You have a situation where a longtime homeowner is in a neighborhood, has not left that neighborhood, and then has found that their house hasn't appreciated enough, so they couldn't move even if they wanted to because they couldn't afford to buy a house in a better neighborhood. So if their house is only worth $10,000 or $15,000, they might want to move off of that block, but they can't.
Let me get back to the question of the roots of vacants. Community activist Glenn Ross did an interview with the Baltimore Development Cooperative in 2006, and he said in that interview that city government and large private institutions like Johns Hopkins were purposefully land banking vacant properties. In talking about Middle East Baltimore, he said, quote, you may have 30 to 40 houses on a block with only 6 houses occupied. So how much do you think those properties are worth? So they deliberately do this and deteriorate properties. They know what areas are going to decay. So they invest in these areas and they milk these properties for rent and put no repairs back in them, end quote. Is this a commonly held view?
I don't know if it's a commonly held view. I think it's something that a lot of people in these communities that have a lot of vacant houses believe. And I think one reason they believe in it is when they see properties that are abandoned and they see nothing really done to those properties to fix them up or even make sure that they're boarded properly, they feel abandoned by government. That's kind of a complicated issue. I don't think it's really the result of, a concentrated effort on the part of government or of institutions. Now, having said that, I will say that sometimes when governments or institutions buy up properties in neighborhoods that nobody else wants, the end result of that is that you do have a perpetuation of a vacant house, because they're buying that house and holding on to it. And usually when they buy it, like, for example, when the city takes over a vacant property, it's usually gone through, the auction process. They're trying to sell it. Nobody wants it, so then the city takes it over. But then the city does hold on to it. And so that, on one hand, that perpetuates the vacancy. And there's the kernel of truth in what Glenn Ross was saying.
I mean, it's really difficult when, you know, whether it's an institution, whether it's the city, whoever it is, if they buy a property that's already vacant and they don't make any improvements to it, they have not helped the situation. They've only made it worse.
In a moment, we're going to take a closer look at the current program in place to address vacants. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's vacants to value. Eric, tell me, before we do that, I'd like to hear you outline for us what you would consider the ideal program to deal with vacants.
Well, I think the first thing I would do is I would try and stem the loss of population in the city, because unless you stop people from moving out of the city, you're basically just treading water if you try and fix up vacant houses, because you're going to create new vacant houses somewhere else. So you have to do the things that we all know, good schools, low crime, better environment, to keep people who are here staying here. And then I think you have to really target your resources. As Mel said, I think you need to get a certain critical mass of redevelopment in a neighborhood. You have to choose your neighborhoods carefully, where you're going to concentrate your resources, and then you have to try and do 50 houses in that neighborhood. And I think in some cases you have to make some pretty critical decisions on the quality of the housing that exists. For example, is it really capable of being renovated, or is it better to demolish a block and create either open space or the opportunity for new housing?
But that's expensive, too, to demolish.
None of this is cheap. It's very, very difficult, and, you know, but you've got to keep working at it, and I think you have to be very, very focused in what you're doing and where you're doing it.
I want to thank you both for talking to us. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Siegel is an instructor at Johns Hopkins Institute for Policy Studies. In 3 decades at the Baltimore Sun, he covered housing and development in Baltimore City. Mel Freeman is the executive director of the Baltimore-based Citizens Planning and Housing Association. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast.
I'm assistant producer Jamila Kay. You're listening to Maryland Mornings, The Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
You're listening to The Lines Between Us, our year-long series on inequality in the Baltimore region. This week, we're looking at the issue of vacant homes. Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has proposed her own plan to deal with the vacants in Baltimore. It's called Vacants to Value. She launched it in November 2010. The program focuses on selling the vacants in specific transitioning neighborhoods. Producer Stephanie Hughes went to look at one of the vacant homes for sale. She brings us this report.
It's not every open house that begins with the signing of a liability waiver.
You know, we encourage you to be careful, you know, safety. You know, if you feel unsafe, please come out immediately.
Okay.
I don't want you to go in too far, just for safety purposes.
Nikki Cooper and Teresa Stevens are advising potential homebuyer Stephanie Gaynor on safety before she enters a vacant home in Northwest Baltimore. Gaynor came prepared.
I've got a flashlight and I've got shoes that can take the mud because it's raining. So I was going to bring a can of bug spray, but it looks like we're good.
The house Gaynor's considering is available through the city's Vacants to Value program. It's a freestanding home in the Callaway Garrison neighborhood of Northwest Baltimore. From the outside, it looks like it's been empty a while. It's boarded up with lots of broken windows, and there's vines covering the outside of the house.
I mean, a lot of people probably look at it and think, an abandoned home. That's what it is. It's an abandoned home. It's a big home. I love the yard. I love the trees. Grew up in the county. I've lived in the city for much of my life. Here's a chance for a little of both.
Baltimore is going to need lots more people like Gaynor in order to fill the city's 16,000 vacant homes. That's the city's number. The count is debated. Other groups say the number is much higher. Those vacants can cause problems for people like Laura Cheatham, who lives in the Midway neighborhood in East Baltimore.
There is an eyesore across the street from me. There's a vacant house where the windows have been knocked out. The frames for the windows are like rotten. And the neighbors are trying to keep the grass cut.
With Vacants to Value, the city is focused on rehabbing properties in specific neighborhoods.
The first thing, and one thing that's really key to this type of work, is know your inventory.
Julie Day is the deputy commissioner for the Land Resources Division of Baltimore Housing. She says the city has analyzed market demand for housing block by block in different neighborhoods.
So we overlay that with where are the vacant buildings and what's the best approach to a vacant building in a strong neighborhood compared to a distressed neighborhood.
Callaway Garrison, where Stephanie Gaynor is looking, is an emerging market with only a few vacant homes. In those communities, and in areas next to major developments, like Johns Hopkins Hospital, the city is focused on getting the vacants cleaned up. One way to do this is through marketing the properties to the public, basically teaching people how to buy a vacant.
So now, like every 2 or 3 weeks, there's a workshop, and it's a rotating cycle. How do you buy a city-owned property? How do you rehab a property? How do you market it after you've rehabbed it? How do you get the home buyer incentives that we're offering?
There's a marketing team at these events. They hand out tape measures and rose-colored glasses. No, really, rose-colored glasses, so people can see the vacants as something other than blight. Most of the vacants are still being bought and rehabbed by investors and contractors. But if you buy a rehabbed vacant from a developer, you can still get a $10,000 vacants-to-value grant. If you buy a home to renovate yourself, but don't rehab it in the first 12 months, the city can take it back. For the vacants the city doesn't own, Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano says his code enforcement division is handing out $900 citations to owners of structures with vacant building notices.
They're unoccupied and unoccupiable. In targeted neighborhoods, we will go after the owner and say, you must get this property rehabbed and reoccupied. And if you're still unwilling to do that, we will actually go to court and seek a receivership action, meaning that we'll ask the judge to appoint a receiver who will then auction the property to somebody who will rehab it.
Again, the city says there are 16,000 vacants. 6,000 of them are in areas the city considers strong enough to be revitalized, or else they're close to a large-scale redevelopment effort, such as Uplands and Edmondson Village. The rest? Here's Julie Day.
We probably have about 10,000 buildings that we need to demolish. Those are like intractable blight in blocks that are just not, you know, either not structurally viable or there's just no foreseeable time when there will be a market.
The city's strategic approach to dealing with vacants is a wise one, according to Joe Schilling of the Metropolitan Institute at Virginia Tech. He studies programs for vacants used by different cities around the country. He says one way Baltimore could benefit is by strengthening ties with community groups.
People, they're the foot soldiers, you know, the folks in the community. They have to be engaged and listened to, because it's one thing for the private sector and vacants to value, or, you know, the public sector to go in and use their code enforcement strategies. But if the people don't want to be involved, that are not involved as much as they should, or even when you go through and you renovate a property, if there's no civic infrastructure, it's going to make it a lot more difficult to attract people or retain people.
Schilling says Baltimore has some of those partnerships, and community outreach is part of the Vacants to Value program. But he said other cities are ahead.
The network is not as extensive as Cleveland or Philadelphia. So again, I think there's some things that they could learn from those cities, just as those cities are learning about some of Baltimore's innovative strategies.
When Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake launched the Vacants to Value program in November 2010, she had a goal: rehabilitate 1,000 properties in the first year. That hasn't happened. But Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano says they're making progress. Of the 6,000 vacants in neighborhoods the city is targeting, he says they've identified 2,700 properties to rehabilitate.
And of that total of 2,700 plus properties that were vacant when we started this program, 843 are already rehabbed or under construction right now. And this is all a consequence of the Vacants to Value program. In addition, over 800 properties are in the pipeline for receivership action, meaning that we're either in court or moving to court for those 800 additional properties.
That means 1,600 of the city's estimated 16,000 vacants are either being renovated or on their way. To calculate it another way, the city is about a tenth of the way there. That can be small comfort to the people who are living with the reality of vacants every day. One of those people is Will Smith, who lives in the Barclay neighborhood in East Baltimore.
Kind of like sticks out like a weed. The more vacant houses you have in the neighborhood, the more it chokes the the economic growth of the neighborhood.
The process of speeding up that growth is a slow one, says Paul Graziano.
You know, we've got another many years of activity here. Again, we started in 1950, we had a population of close to a million people. Today, it's a bit over 600,000. It's going to take some time to grow.
So, while the real estate market may be fluctuating, it looks like with vacant homes, at least for the short term, it'll continue to be a buyer's market.
Maryland Morning producer Stephanie Hughes. We've received a lot of responses to the Lines Between Us series. You can see them on the series website, linesbetweenus.org. You can also find more of the interview with Mel Freeman and Eric Siegel, including some analysis of how vacants can affect property values. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Next week on the Lines Between Us, the history of racial integration in two Baltimore neighborhoods.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.